Hello, Filthy Mutt. This might seem a little out of the blue, but on my verification thread, you stated that I had a chill voice. Whatever that means, but I'll take it. I'll take it. And you most likely, probably jokingly suggested that I read you a bedtime story. And I decided to take you up on that offer. Actually, when I'm home alone, one of my favorite things to do is to just pick up a book or a play and read it out loud and embody these different characters. Granted, I'm not terribly good at that, but it's still fun, nevertheless. And I don't really know what constitutes a bedtime story because, in my defense, I was not really read to as a child. I mean, I was an avid reader, but I had to do it myself. Like, nobody read it to me. Yes, this is going to be very rambly. Rambly? Oh, and please ignore any background noises. I'm not home alone and there's probably a lot of sound coming in through the window. Yeah. I hope you enjoy it. Yeah. This is so awkward. So the book I picked is Something Fishy, Hazel Green. It's by Odo Hirsch. Okay. Chapter 1. Hazel Green looked down from her balcony. I'm sorry. Calm yourself, woman. Calm yourself. God damn Hazel Green looked down from her balcony. It was early, much earlier than she had ever been up before. The springtime sun had come streaming between the curtains in her bedroom and headed straight for her face, like a warm feather duster tickling her nose, like a golden voice humming in her ear. And what was it humming? That a new, fresh day was ready to start, and the sooner she got up, the sooner it would begin. Out on the balcony, the railing was wet with dew. The tiles under Hazel's bare feet were cool. The air was still chilly from the night. Hazel pulled her dressing gown snug around her. 12 stories below, the street was empty. A bird twittered. Its voice was clear and pure. It warbled, stopped, and warbled again, as if it were so early that not even the birds were sure whether they should start singing it. Hazel listened. The chilly air made her skin tingle, and the chirping song of the birds made her smile, and the empty street made her happy, because everything she could see from her balcony, the whole city, was hers, and there wasn't anyone else to share. There wasn't anyone else. There wasn't. Yes, there was. Hazel frowned. She could hear an engine. The bird had stopped singing, as if it were listening as well, as if it was thinking exactly what Hazel was thinking, which was, what was anyone doing driving around at this time of the morning? In fact, if people were going to drive around this early, there was hardly any point in getting up. It ruined everything. Hazel leaned forward over the railing. Nothing. The street was empty for as far as she could see. The noise stopped. There was silence for a moment. Then it started again, a deep, raw rumble, a rusty, throaty roar, getting louder, coming closer. A van appeared at a corner. Hazel watched it. The van stopped, waited, then started moving again, turning left and rumbling towards her. It was a gray van. Its body was big and square, and it had a small, narrow snout. It came slowly and steadily along the road, just like a mouse creeping, whiffling and sniffling. A mouse, thought Hazel, with a bad cold and a nasty, rumbling cough. The van crept past her. Then it pulled in and stopped. The noise of the engine died. A door opened. Hazel watched to see who would get out. It was a man in a dark shirt and a long white apron. What was he doing all by himself so early in the morning? If he was up to no good, Hazel suddenly realized, she would be the only witness. The man went around to the back of the van to open the doors. Hazel peered closer to see who it was. Suddenly, her eyes went wide. It was Mr. Petruska, the fishmonger. By the time Hazel reached the street, after running down 12 flights of stairs, both doors of the van were open. Mr. Petruska was leaning into it. When he turned around, he was carrying an enormous crate. "Hello," said Hazel. Mr. Petruska gave a start. "Hazel, where did you come from?" Hazel frowned. That depended where you wanted to start and how far back you wanted to go. "I saw you from a balcony," said Hazel, "but I heard you even before that." Mr. Petruska was confused. "You heard me?" "Is that crate heavy?" asked Hazel. "It looked heavy. It was full of fish and ice." Mr. Petruska nodded. His arms were straining to carry it. He took it inside. Hazel waited beside the van until he came back. "What are you doing, Mr. Petruska?" "What does it look like, Hazel?" "I'm unloading my van." Mr. Petruska leaned in and pulled out another crate of fish. He carried it towards his shop. "Did you load it yourself?" said Hazel, following him in. "Of course," said Mr. Petruska. He set the crate down at the back of his shop, behind the counters. Hazel followed him as he went out to the van again. "That seems like a lot of work," said Hazel. "It is," called out Mr. Petruska, with his head in the van. He pulled out another crate. "But how else are the fish going to get here? Do you think they can walk by themselves?" "Of course not," thought Hazel. "That was ridiculous. Fish can't walk." "And they don't swim either," said Mr. Petruska, as if he knew exactly what Hazel was thinking. "I'll go and get them, that's how." Hazel followed Mr. Petruska into the shop again. "Where do you get them?" "From the fish market." Mr. Petruska dumped the crate on the ground. "Didn't you know?" No, Hazel didn't know. Mr. Petruska folded his arms across his chest. He had cloudy blue eyes, so soft and gentle that sometimes it was hard to believe they belonged to the same person whose thick red hands could slit, gut, and fillet a fish in less than a minute, and now they gazed at Hazel with puzzlement, as if he couldn't quite believe that here, right in front of him, close enough to touch, in flesh and blood, was a person who didn't know about the fish market. "Behind the docks, Hazel, there's an enormous market, as big as a football field. All the fishermen bring their catch in the mornings. It opens at 2 and it closes by 5, and in that time they sell everything they've caught. Don't ask me how many fish that makes. Thousands. More. Thousands and thousands." "And prawns?" said Hazel. Mr. Petruska nodded. "And oysters?" "Oysters as well." Hazel glanced at the crates of fish lying around her. "And you go every day?" "Of course," said Mr. Petruska. "Don't you think my fish are fresh?" "Oh, yes," said Hazel quickly. Telling a fishmonger his fish went fresh was probably the nastiest thing you could do. It would make him want to slit and fillet you. Besides, Mr. Petruska's fish were fresh. Everybody said so. "It's just that..." "What?" "I didn't know," said Hazel. Mr. Petruska chuckled. "You have to be up early, Hazel. The best and the freshest fish are sold at once, and if I can't give my customers the best and the freshest, I prefer to give them nothing at all." "I am up early. I'm up earlier than anybody." "Not early enough for me," said Mr. Petruska, and he went back out to the van, laughing to himself. Hazel frowned. She gazed at the crates on the floor around her. There were already 10 or 11 that Mr. Petruska had brought in. There was a shallow crate of brown, horny crabs, crawling and sliding over each other, snapping their claws. Next to them was a box full of salmon. They were as long as your arm, and Hazel could imagine the way their lovely pink flesh would taste if you cooked them just right. Hazel's mother always cooked a whole salmon whenever there was a special occasion, like her grandmother's 70th birthday. There must have been a dozen salmon in the box. Hazel wondered whether there were a dozen families having special occasions that day. Of course, it was possible, because there were a lot of grandmothers around, she knew, and since they were so old, they were often turning 70, or even 80. Beside the salmon was a box of big, flat fish. These ones had both eyes on the same side of their heads, which didn't seem right, at least for a fish. Then there was a crate of shiny mussels, with beardlets of bright green seaweed hanging to their shells. Then there was a tray of squid, with straggles of tentacles and shivery white bodies. Then there was a tray of prawns, with streamlets of legs and eyes like tiny blackberries. Next to them was a box of sardines, which were no bigger than your finger. Then there was a big box of eels that looked just like snakes, but slimy and sticky instead. And then there were boxes of other fish mixed together, grey and yellow and red and silver and bluish and all the other colours that a fish can be. And some of them had fins with sharp spines, and some of them had long snouts with teeth, and some of them had little whiskery things near their mouths, and some of them had big humps on their backs, or spots on their skin, or freckles on their nose, or stripes on their side. Yet it wasn't about the fish that Hazel was thinking. It was about one simple fact. She didn't know. Ever since she was a little girl, Hazel had lived in the Moody Building, where the whole ground floor was taken up with shops of one sort or another, and she knew almost all the shopkeepers. But now she thought she had discovered everything. By now, she thought she had discovered everything about them. For instance, she knew how the baker, Mr. Volio, and his assistants baked all night and finished their work just when everybody else was getting up in the morning. And she knew how the fruiterers, the Coughlins, stored their fruit and vegetables in two big storerooms behind their shop and had a third storeroom which they only used for extra big deliveries of potatoes. And she knew how Mr. Petruska could slit, gut, and fillet a fish in 15 seconds and open an oyster with his flat oyster knife in the blink of an eye. Yet all these years that she had been coming to visit the fishmonger and Mr. Petruska would smile at her as he filleted fish for his customers, he had been getting up at 2 in the morning and going to the giant market behind the dock before she was even awake. And she had no idea. And what was even worse was that, if only she had bothered to think, she would have known that something was going on. After all, how did the fish get to Mr. Petruska's shop every day, if it wasn't Mr. Petruska who went and got them? Mr. Petruska was still coming in and out with boxes. The last one contained big fish with bright silver bellies and striped blue backs. And finally, he came in hauling the tail half of an enormous fish that would have been as big as Hazel herself, perhaps bigger, when it was whole. He was carrying it over his shoulder, grasping it by both hands around the tail. Hazel could see the rich, dark flesh where it had been cut. Mr. Petruska lowered the half fish onto the counter, and then he arched his back to stretch his muscles after all that carrying. There were boxes of fish all around him. Well, what do you think, Hazel? They look fresh, Mr. Petruska, that's for sure. Mr. Petruska grinned. Come here, Hazel. What was that? Mr. Petruska grinned. Come here, Hazel. Now I'll show you something really special. They went back out to the van. There was only one box left. This one had a lid. Mr. Petruska lifted it and carried it inside. He put it down on the counter. Then, very carefully, he opened it. Hazel peered into the box. Inside were two lobsters. They were easily the biggest lobsters Hazel had ever seen. Are they dead? Asked Hazel, poking a finger at one of them. It jumped and started thrashing as soon as she touched its shell. An instant later, the other one was jumping with it. Hazel only just got her finger away from their snappers in time. Mr. Petrushka laughed. I don't think they like that. Come on, let's put them in the tank. In the front of the shop, there was already a tank of lobsters waiting to be sold. None of them was anywhere near as big as the two enormous lobsters in the box. Mr. Petrushka went into the back of the shop, where there was a second tank. It was filled with water, but there was nothing else in it. Very carefully, he took each lobster out and placed it on the glass at the bottom. Immediately, the lobsters came to life. They jumped, crawled, and set off around the tank, waving their claws in the water. They bumped and clashed with each other and set off around the tank again until they bumped and clashed once more. Each of these lobsters, said Mr. Petrushka as they watched, was like a king in his part of the sea, Hazel. They ruled the sand. Look at the size of them. They're probably 20 years old. Mr. Petrushka stared at the lobsters silently for a while. Their shells, like the armor of knights in ancient times, were knobbly with age. I didn't get them both from the same fisherman. Oh no, you'd never find such big ones living near each other. In fact, I've never found two at the fish market on the same day before. Normally, I have to search for weeks to find a pair. A pair? Why did he need a pair? They're for Mr. Trimble. He's one of my oldest customers. Every year, he asks me for a pair of the biggest, most succulent lobsters I can find. It's for a special lobster dinner that he always has with a friend. This is the 30th year, Hazel. Imagine that. And this year, I think I found him the best ever. They watched the lobsters, which had stopped thrashing now and had come to rest at opposite ends of the tank, eyeing each other suspiciously. The best ever, murmured Mr. Petrushka. If I feed them carefully, they may get even bigger. Alright, so that was the first chapter. I'm sorry, there was a lot of mistakes, and I've never recorded myself reading a book out loud. So, tell me what you think, whether it was good or bad, if you would like me to continue, or something, if you have a book suggestion. Oh, and the reason I picked this particular book is because it's because I had a lot of fun reading this particular book as a child. Just the characters, and it's just a book that stuck with me. So I decided to read it for you. Yeah. Alright. I don't know how to end this. This is why you should never let me improv. Okay. Well, I hope you enjoyed it, and I will talk to you later, maybe. Bye!